And therefore, I didn't really think it through the fact that I was going to go from being in this busy, buzzy office environment to suddenly I'm working on my own at home.
That must have been
no one to bounce ideas off. I was climbing the walls and I found it really, really tough.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. Hello, this podcast is about balance, particularly for freelance service providers and solo entrepreneurs. Do you know there's a romanticism about starting a business and carving your own path? And the reality can be very different, leading to overwhelm and possibly burnout. Many people, including myself, head out looking for freedom, but effectively create a job without benefits. My guest on the show today is Sarah Townsend, and she is an author of the book Survival Skills for Freelancers, a resource to support you on your freelance journey. Her story is one of a teenager itching to get out to work, but not knowing what to do. She went into financial services and she spent a bit of time in quality management. It was here that she learnt her business social skills. Eventually moving into marketing, and she landed an amazing job with an in-house magazine publisher. These are those glossy giveaway magazines that you see in supermarkets and other larger stores. It was her perfect job. Lots of buzz, teamwork and banter. After 3 years in that role, she became pregnant with her first child, and she explored the idea of working part-time. Now, this was the late 90s. The idea of short hours, flexible working was not going to wash with the managing director. It's many years before the idea of work from home, that's for sure. But it was her managing editor that suggested an alternative option: become a freelance copywriter. Our conversation is the story of how Sarah Townsend became a freelancer and also discovered she was a mum with two babies, her daughter and a new business. Over the last 20 years, Sarah has discovered most of the big pitfalls, and she's put them into her book so that other freelancers can learn from her journey. We discuss self-care, mindset, how imposter syndrome can cripple the best laid plans, and the importance of finding balance. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. I am delighted, as always, to have a guest with me today, Sarah Townsend. Now, I know she's an author. I know she's a copywriter, been involved in marketing. I also know she's about organization and helping people find the best way of working properly for themselves. Probably said that awfully, but I'm sure she will explore that with us and give us a little bit more about it. So, Sarah, thank you for taking some time to be with me today.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
So look, this is Life, Passion and Business. And as I say, I mean, this is the journey of life. How did it start for you? Where did it all begin?
Well, that's a big question, isn't it? Let's kick off the big questions with a big question. I would say I fell into marketing, and from that, I fell into freelance life. And I've been freelancing for 22 years now. But what I do in my life now, and the book I've written and the work that I do on the back of writing the book, really all began 22 years ago, same age as my daughter. I was working full time for a publishing agency down in Bristol. We published customer magazines, like the sort of thing you might pick up in Tesco or whatever. Mm-hmm. I loved my job. I absolutely loved working there. It always had this busy, buzzy kind of agency environment going on. Lots of chat, lots of banter, music on in the background. And I'd been there about 3 years when I became pregnant. And I was working in Bristol and living in Gloucester. So I knew that when I had my baby, I didn't want to go back to work full time. But I also knew that I didn't have it in me to be a full-time parent. So I talked to my managing director and said, well, could I come back to work a couple of days a week? Of course, this was 1999. This was way before businesses had an obligation to let you come back part-time or to incorporate flexible working in some way. And he just said, no, absolutely not. You're an account manager. You can't expect your clients to understand that you're not in the office every day.
Also, to be fair, I know this. It's like, before children and after children, they're different. You are different, a different person.
Oh, for sure.
When I before I was a dad, I was like, kids. Couldn't eat a whole one, and like after becoming a dad, life just was completely different. So he the your guy the guy would know that there's no way you're going to be able to put the effort in or what he required of you. I mean,
That's very true. Do you know what? I've never thought of it that way. All these times I've told this story, I've actually never thought of it that way, but you're right. And I guess the next thing that happened was my direct boss, my managing editor, took me out for a nice swanky lunch at Brown's. And over a glass of wine, she asked me if I would consider going freelance. And she said, well, look, we'll help you out with bits of proofreading and editing to kind of get you started. So back then, 1999, I was still married. And my husband at the time had a full-time job, which was fairly steady. We decided that we could take the hit on the regular income. So, yeah, that just kick-started my journey into freelance life and self-employment. And I spent most of my maternity leave designing letterheaded paper and comp slips and business cards and
See, that's
getting
di see that
myself.
is different from working for someone because you've got it's another baby.
Exactly that.
And the energy you put into that
Exactly that. Yeah, exactly. So I found myself in, say, September 1999. My daughter was about 3, 4 months old. She'd started to go to nursery 2 or 3 days a week. And I did find myself precisely that with two babies, a new business, which I knew nothing about running a business, not the first thing. I didn't know anybody who was freelance. I didn't know anyone who ran their own business. And on the other hand, I had this parenting thing and I didn't know anything about that either. So yeah, it was pretty tough.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, but kind of the rest is history. 22 years later, I'm still running my own business. I've now written a book about it based on my experiences. And yeah, that kind of brings us up to
So,
date.
well, I need to go back a bit further than that because you're like, what did you want to be when you got big?
It's a long time since I thought of that. I think I really didn't genuinely have a clue. I knew that I didn't want to go to uni. I don't have a degree. I did A levels, but they weren't especially helpful ones, English, theatre studies, history. And I remember being hauled into the headmaster's office saying, you need to go to university. It's a waste if you don't. And you could start work in 3 years' time with a salary of X. And I'm just thinking, I don't get the logic because to me, I just wanted to go out and start work straight away and start learning on the job and getting the experience under my belt, learning customer service, this kind of thing. So I sort of fell into financial services and didn't really have a clue what I wanted to do. I remember the careers advisor saying, well, you could work in a bank or a building society. I didn't want to do that, but I didn't know what I wanted. So I did kind of fall into this role where I was learning how to deal with, I guess, kind of to a certain degree, learning the kind of business social skills, how to total quality management was the thing
It
back
was,
then.
wasn't it? Yes, TQM.
Yeah, TQM.
I remember TQM and I remember the awards of it as well. So it's interesting. What the reason I asked this question is because you said when you were working in this company that it was a really enjoyable, it was fast, you really enjoyed it. So I'm trying to work out what the passion for that was. What was the driver behind all of that? And also where it came from, because
Yeah.
I like to know where this stuff comes from. I'm just noting.
Yeah, do you know, I'm not sure I know really. I think I'm quite I'm an extroverted introvert, I would describe myself as. So I do like being around people and I do get my energy from people. And therefore I didn't really think it through the fact that I was going to go from being in this busy, buzzy office environment to suddenly I'm working on my own
Oh,
at home,
that must have been
no
tough.
one to bounce ideas off. I was climbing the walls and I found it really, really tough. So yeah, there's
Yeah,
that
see,
could
now
be.
there's another thing. Now I know this from my wife and from other friends. It's that when you have a baby, your brain becomes fudge because all you're dealing with is food and poop.
Yes, very true.
And also, as they get older, you're having like those childlike conversations, and so it's really hard to balance the two. Your brain, it's really hard to get, to develop the brain in that respect. So how did you balance that? Because you said you were on your own. You had no adult input.
No, I didn't. And yeah, no, I mean, I think that's really why I found it so tough, because I wanted to. I've always been naturally very driven by achievement. So I'm very much one of those people who, I was saying to my partner yesterday, what must it feel like to be able to just enjoy the bank holiday, to just not feel like, oh, I should be doing this, I should be doing this, oh, I need to do this in the garden, I need to do this in the home, or whatever it is. I feel like I have to be ticking things off all the time. That's just me. I'm very achievement driven. I can't set goals in my life because my goals become my obsessions. Much like trying to get on as many podcasts in a year as I possibly can. I think you're number 40 in less than a year. So it's pretty good going. But if I'd set it as a goal, I just would have thought of nothing else.
That's a lot
So
of podcasts to get on in a year. Wow,
yeah.
well done.
Thank you. It's pretty much, I reckon, an average of one a week in the number of weeks that I've been doing it. Maybe slightly less. But yeah, I digress. So yes, foggy brain. I think fudge brain. I do like
So how did you
that.
I mean, obviously, how did you survive that? Because obviously you were then trying to hold the business together, you were parenting. What
Yeah.
happened?
Well, I don't think I did. And I think that's the reason I got to the start of 2020 and decided I needed to write a book about it. Because at the time, I was just muddling through. I didn't really know about boundaries. I didn't really know about work-life balance and how important these things were. And I have this kind of big driver now that I think that small business owners and self-employed freelancers, whatever you want to call them, we don't have that a person to go to if we're having kind of a mental health challenge day. You know, if we're really struggling, we're finding it difficult to we need somebody to talk to share our thoughts and ideas and to kind of reassure us that we're not alone going through the challenges that we're facing. And often with big companies waking up to mental health issues, they're starting to invest in getting staff trained as mental health first aiders, as a designated person that staff can go to if they're facing challenges. But as freelancers and self-employed people, we don't have that luxury. So we have to kind of represent for ourselves on that basis. And that's what I didn't know. And I've always struggled throughout my life with various mental health and anxiety sort of challenges. And I really, really found it difficult. And I think at the time, I didn't even recognize that I was going through all these challenges. I just thought I was rubbish. I just thought,
How does that anxiety come out in you? Sorry, I asked the question, you see. I don't put any boundaries in this
No,
stuff.
that's cool. It's kind of evolved, I guess, throughout my life, but I mean, I get the kind of physical, like I feel like someone's got their hands around my throat. I can't
Wow.
breathe properly. I feel like I can't get my breath. Like I imagine a breath is kind of a certain capacity. I feel like I can only breathe to say 70, 80%, and I can't get the top of that breath, which means that I'm then doing that horrible chest breathing, which means that I'm not doing the deep breathing that puts the oxygen back into my system that makes everything kind of feel right again. And it very much has shown up really throughout my life and even now in the form of a lot of self-doubt and a lot of imposter syndrome. And ironically, the seventh chapter in my book, the seventh myth that I bust, is about imposter syndrome and how it can hold you back if you let it. And I've done lots of talks and events since I wrote the book last year about imposter syndrome. And the question that people always ask me is, do you ever suffer from imposter syndrome now? And I'm like, are you kidding? I have to reread the chapter of my own book to remind myself of the advice, because I still feel it.
Well, there's that lovely story from Meryl Streep when someone asked her what her greatest fear was. And she said, my greatest fear is, and it's a reoccurring dream, she said, well, I'll be on the stage about to perform and someone will tap me on the shoulder and go, come on, Meryl, it's not working. Off you go.
Really? She's another famous person.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, everybody has this. Everybody has this, doesn't they, on some level. And it's healthy on some level, because I think when you become too arrogant on it,
yes,
then you become, then it's the opposite problem. You become a narcissist on stage.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I always say that. I think a bit of humility certainly does you good. And I have this list that I kind of use at the start of the events that I do about the subject, which is what do Tom Hanks, Serena Williams, Lady Gaga, Maya Angelou, Kylie Minogue, what do they have in common? And I'm now going to add Meryl Streep to that list. Because really, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for all of us, right? Mm. And it's just part of being human. So I've forgotten where we were going with that.
If we're not touching an edge, then we're not growing, are we, in a way? So that imposter bit, in a way, is, I mean, you can't always be good at everything to start with, can you? There's got to be a point in time when you're crap at something.
There's always a first time. And actually, I think this is where we get into a lot of sticky trouble because I think particularly with social media is an absolute so-and-so for this, that you could be kind of looking at two people who do a similar business to you or provide a similar service to you. And you could look at their social media and go, oh God, you know, they've nailed reels on Instagram and their video content is fantastic, but actually they could have been doing it for 2 years and refining and improving every single stage of the way. Whereas for you, you might just be releasing your first reels or your first video into the social media sphere. And that's when we get into trouble. That comparisonitis kicks in and we kind of see ourselves as being lacking. And that's when we need to detox from social, I think.
Very difficult, isn't it, to not to compare with people?
Very different.
And I had a podcast at the weekend. I did a 10K race at the weekend with my running club. And I was reflecting on it on my Sunday reflection. And the one thing that occurred to me is that what is so fantastic about running and running in a running club and doing a running club race is there's no competition, because we're not racing anything other than ourselves. And we're all supporting each other to get to the line as fast as possible. Yep. But we're all of different abilities. There's no way that we can be fairly raced and matched against each other, because we're all different abilities. But we all want everybody to do good times. And it's such a wonderful experience to be in that environment. I mean, if it was a big race, of course there would be some competition with other people. But because it's a running club, we're all happy the fact that everyone got over the line.
That very much reminds me of something else that I talk about a lot, which is that feeling of how do you treat the people who do the same job as you? Because traditionally we see them as our competition, don't we? But actually, those people are our community because they, more than anybody else out there, know the challenges that you face on a daily basis and how to deal with those challenges. So if you kind of lean into that community, I guess that's exactly what you're doing with your running club. We're all there to kind of cheer one another on and to help.
I guess it might be a bit different if you put some money on the table.
I really don't think it is. I since the start of the very first lockdown last year, I pulled together a group of copywriters we'd all met. One of them was a close friend to begin with, but the rest of us had all met through a couple of conferences just over the years, but didn't know one another at all. And there are seven of us in the group. And now we have this really active WhatsApp group where we share work. So I had an inquiry the other day and I thought, oh, this sounds like a great client, but it's not really my field of expertise. So I shared it with one of the girls in the group who was kind of better positioned to deal with that kind of client. She messaged me this morning and said, great, had a Zoom call over the weekend with a client. She's fantastic. Thank you so much. And I think actually we all get something from doing that, don't we? It's not just helping to be completely, What is the word? We're not just doing it to be magnanimous. We do get a bit of a kickback in terms of we're helping somebody. And
yes.
We can all kind of appreciate that lovely warm glow we get from doing so.
And of course, the other thing is, if that relationship builds, you're going to have two people that are supportive of you, the client, because you gave them a good thing. And obviously your fellow copywriter. So it's wonderful.
Exactly.
It's a great opportunity, that one.
I think that's a really important thing as well, in terms of a lot of people, when you're self-employed, a lot of people wouldn't even consider saying no to work. And I think that's one of the things that I did way back when I was struggling, was I would just accept every piece of work that came my way, whether I had time to do it, whether I had the skills to do it. I just didn't feel that I had the confidence to say no, because I'd think that they would think badly of me. When what I didn't actually realize was that what would make them think badly of me was if I took the work on without the skills or the experience and did a bad job. It never happened, fortunately. But I didn't realize that you could actually say no confidently and assuredly and actually walk away from that situation with your head held high, because you're doing the client a favor. You're perhaps saying, okay, this isn't the right fit for me right now, but what I can do, if it helps you, is recommend a trusted colleague who has a better better availability or better skills or better experience. And that makes the client was delighted that I was able to introduce her to somebody who works in that field. So yeah, it works out well.
So when did you write the book? Because
last January.
Oh, okay. So lockdown. It was a lockdown gift then.
Well, but I'd finished the first draft of the manuscript before COVID was even a thing.
Okay.
So it happened really quickly. At Christmas 2019, it wasn't even on the radar. I'd always said, I don't want to write a book. I'll never write a book.
So it took you sort of 20 years to write this book, by the sounds of it.
You could look at it that way. But I literally had no intention of ever writing a book, because I write for a living. Like, why on earth would I want to spend all my spare time doing the thing that I do all day long anyway?
And
it just sort of happened. I wrote a blog post. The blog post went down really well. And within about 2 months, I decided to turn it into a book, and I'd got the first draft written.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, well done. I mean, you know, writing a book is always a journey. It's a marathon. as everyone can talk about, get your book. But it is. It's a marathon. I've known a few people that have actually taken the trouble to do it. And it's well worth it. But there are some dark nights of the soul involved in it.
Yes. Yes, dark times ahead.
Well, I mean, it's like when you're running a marathon, it's the same thing, or doing anything else. There's always a point when you go, oh, really, do I really have to do this? I mean, and everything has that point, isn't it, in that respect?
Yes, it does. The sticky, now what did I hear it called? Something like the sticky middle section or something, because you start off, and I was so energized by the whole idea, because I felt, I think, for the first time in my life that I was truly on purpose when I was writing the book. I thought, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. The idea came to me kind of in a flash of inspiration. I can't put it any other way. And I would just go with the energy. So every day, I didn't write it in any sort of order. I knew what my structure was going to be. My structure was just I was going to say my structure was perfect. That sounds really cocky. It wasn't perfect to begin with, but I knew exactly how I wanted it to be. And yeah, so I would just write as the energy took me. And I think that comes across in the finished project.
And I guess your structure is how you work. So that's why the structure worked for you, because it's the process you've been doing for years. And that's when books flow. It's like, well, this is what I do. This is how I work with people. Where is the passion for you now? Is the passion in copywriting? Is the passion in teaching freelancers to live a better life? Where does it all sit for you now?
Well, it's both. At the moment, I'm in still a little bit of a state of flux, trying to get the balance absolutely right between the two things that I'm passionate about. But ultimately, both come down to helping people. So with my copywriting service, I'm helping companies to articulate the things that make their business special, using kind of powerful, persuasive, clear and concise language. And that is kind of my contribution on that side. And then on the freelance side, it's doing things like running events and doing mentoring and helping people through the book achieve freelance success, but a lot quicker than I did, and making a lot fewer mistakes. So that's the kind of two things that are driving me. And I've got to be honest, sometimes I find it hard to get the balance right because I don't know which of those two things I should be focusing on. And I haven't always got it right, I don't think. But it's just a lot of people don't ever find one passion. So for me to have found two is just such a gift.
I think everybody actually does do their passion. They just don't know it. They don't recognize it.
Okay.
And it's something, because I don't think it's coming, we can actually not do. I think it's something part of us.
Interesting.
And it could be something like something simple, like, you know, they always have the kitchen tidy, or they always have something ordered because order is something they're passionate about.
Yeah.
You know, and it sometimes, but they're not conscious of it. And that's one thing I have discovered by talking about this a lot.
That is interesting.
Yeah, it's like we can't help but be motivated by something. And yeah, I mean, all right, okay, there are people who are absolutely kind of in a hole, depressed or what have you, and yes, clearly, that's, they're not going to be passionate about that stuff or things because they are so in a hole. But for majority of people, I think they do express it. Maybe not as vividly as you and I do, but they express it in their own way.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I like that.
Moving us on, as I need to, because I'm the boss around here. What does success mean for you?
Well, I used to think success was all about money. And I used to, just to give a bit of context, I guess, so my daughter was 10, I think, when I got divorced or when I split from her dad. I've now got a son as well. And for the past like 12, 13 years, I've been a single mum. So to begin with, having come from, I mean, I go into a lot of very personal detail about my money mindset and where it came from in the book. There's a chapter that just kind of gives the whole thing context. And basically, I was brought up in a family where money was extremely tight. So all my clothes were hand-me-downs, all my toys were handmade. The only time we ever had holidays was when we went and stayed in my grandparents' friend's house while they were on holiday. So to me, I've always had a real issue around money, and it's represented security for me. So to begin with, it was very much financially focused, and I wanted to earn enough so that I could feel that I could provide my children with this sense of, I knew I would never spoil my kids, because I actually think being brought up with a healthy respect for money has done me so much good in life. So I knew that I would never kind of spoil them. My son now has a bit of a worrying kind of mentality around money. He's very anti anything he considers wasting money. So it's quite difficult to be frivolous with my son because he's so sort of sensible around it. But I guess I got to this point where I had enough regular, steady work coming in that I could kind of take my foot off the gas in terms of what I was earning. And that is when the focus kicked into how I was helping other people and the best ways in which I could do that. Because last year when I decided to write the book, I basically gave myself January 2020 off client work. And like the amount of money that I, inverted commas, lost by doing that, I'm never going to get back in book sales in a million years. Because nobody writes a book to make money, not directly at least. So I guess now
we'll get it back in the opportunities and in the doors that it opens.
You
couldn't have paid for those opportunities.
So. No, absolutely not. And that kind of positioning yourself as an expert in the field and all that stuff. But for me, it's always been about helping people. So I guess now having the ability as a freelance, I'm a business owner because I'm a limited company, but I still deep down consider myself to be a freelancer. And I guess it's just having the flexibility and the ability to say no to the work that doesn't inspire and fulfill me, and the clients that don't give me the kind of the goosebumps moments when I have the original discovery call. I like to work for the businesses who I'll say, you know, what, tell me, why does your business exist? What's your kind of bigger picture? What's your why, whatever? And yeah, if they can tell me, if they can describe their business in a way that makes me go, oh, I like it, I literally get the goosebumps moment, then I know that I want to work with them. So for me, being able to kind of work with people whose work fulfills me and enables me to do good in my own small way, and really to be able to pick and choose. But most of all, I think true success is about balance. It's about having that ability to put yourself first and your clients first. So to really take care of your mental health and well-being, because you're nothing without it.
Mm.
If you drive yourself into the ground and you know, you're wearing that kind of badge of honor of, oh yeah, oh, I can't afford to take a bank holiday Monday off. You know, a lot of people on LinkedIn are kind of like, oh, did you take time off over the bank holiday? I didn't. I was too busy doing this. And actually, it shouldn't be worn like a badge of honor, because we can all be more fulfilled, more focused, more productive when we do take time off. And there are surveys out there.
Gary, the hustle thing, isn't it? I mean, Gary Vaynerchuk was the primary thing about hustle thing. And it's like, I remember him being, you know, filming in his office about hustle, and all his staff were there at 9 o'clock at night, and he was proud about that. I thought to myself, that's awful.
I think it is. I think it is.
How would they have any choice but to stay?
Exactly. And they're working for him, so it's not even their own business. And I think a lot of the time when we are running our own business and we're doing the thing, we are on purpose and we are doing the thing that we love doing, we're feeling creative, it's really difficult to know when to stop. But actually, if you don't put in place certain boundaries that say, okay, so work time is finished, now it's time to do other things that fulfill me. And I mean, like for me, I have to build exercise into my day. If I don't get out at least for a walk around the block, I know that I'm not going to be as fulfilled and I'm not going to be as productive or as focused. I'm going to be sitting here sort of staring blankly at the screen, because you can't, the human brain does not function nonstop without breaks. So yeah, I think it's a lot to do with having that balance, doing the other things that fulfill you and working with people who inspire you and support you. Those things are really important, and not just the car you drive, the number of exotic holidays you have and the amount you earn.
No, indeed. Well, I mean, there are times when those things are important, and there are times when, yep, and it's everyone's choice as what's important now and then.
For sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, that Maslow's hierarchy of need, it always kicks in. You know, when you need to actually put food on the table, then you're going to have to work. That's it.
Yeah. That's why I think your five questions are so inspired, because it's a formula that works, because everybody has such a different answer to give within that five question sort of formula.
Well, I think once you've got an answer to these, and the answers will change, they will change,
yes,
all the time.
Yeah.
And I've now developed the process on the five questions, is that I answer them every day. I answer them for myself every day, just one line. So what am I passionate about today? What would success look like today?
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
How am I going to contribute today? So that's what I'm doing at the moment. And I have to say, it's bloody tough sometimes, because I'm not perfect either. It's interesting you were talking about that the anxiety you have and about breathing. I used to get anxiety in my stomach, and it wasn't anything other than like a tightness in my stomach. I might be doing something and I got a tight because I haven't done something.
Mm.
And you reminded me of it. And I've noticed that since I've taken up yoga, I don't get that anymore.
Oh, yes, I bet. Yoga's fabulous, isn't it?
Because of the deep breathing. I don't get it anymore.
Exactly that. Yeah.
So that's, and I hadn't connected the two until you suddenly mentioned that. I thought, oh, I must point out, I must mention that.
Right.
So you mentioned contribution, which is a lovely word. Well, how do you contribute to the world?
Well, I guess a lot of my answers are quite overlappy.
Yes.
In terms of, I think it's coming back to the two ways in which I help people. So I help businesses to become more visible and therefore more accessible and therefore more successful using the copywriting that I provide. And I help people who are perhaps thinking of going freelance to have the confidence to take the leap because they're dealing with the stuff that's up here, the mindset issues and the personal issues that are the things that are likely to hold them back. So I help them kind of tackle those challenges that they might not even realize are challenges of self-employment. There are lots of books and resources out there that focus on, oh, you need a business plan, you need processes and systems and blah, 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 but actually not an awful lot that deals with the mindset and the stuff that's very personal to do with your mental health and well-being. So yeah, I guess those are the contributions.
How do you contribute to yourself?
Well, I started when I turned 50, which was not last year, the year before. I decided that when I got to 50, I was going to start taking Fridays off and start doing some of the other stuff that fulfills me. So, in a lot of cases, I say that I don't do client work on Fridays. Sometimes I do things that are going to develop my business, but I try not to do even the business development tasks. What I would prefer to do is have a call or an in-person meeting. How exciting is that? With someone who I've met quite often through social media, who I feel we're on the same sort of page. And quite often from those sometimes real life lunches or walk and talk type calls, it'll inspire me to kind of do the next thing, or I'll give them some inspiration or whatever. But then I can also do things like make sure that I get my swim in, read a book outside in the garden, all the things that I love doing that aren't related to business. And that has really helped with my stress level. It's helped me to become, I believe, more productive than ever in the 4 days that I'm doing client work. So yeah, I think that feels like an investment in my business because it's an investment in me.
Yes, absolutely. I've heard many people say the more time they take out of stuff, the more productive they become.
Yeah, it's like that Pareto principle you were
Yeah, it
talking
is.
about in the time thing. Like it makes the 20% of time kind of more you're more focused on it, I guess, and you're more fixated on making sure that it's super productive because you know you don't, you know, work expands to fit the time available to do it in, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
Yeah.
when I think how little work I used to do when I worked in corporate, and I was reflecting on that recently, and I said, like I spent a lot of time chatting to people and doing just nothing.
Yeah, I can relate. Yeah, I did that too.
I know many people, but I mean, they say it's important time, and I guess it is important time in the environment you're in because of you're building relationships in those environments.
Yeah.
But when I think about amount of time that was actually productive work, it probably was a fraction of what
Yeah.
of the hours I was there.
Yeah. That doesn't
And I
surprise me.
still hit my target, and I still made loads of money for the company. But it's like, well, what is actually possible when we really consider this?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, fascinating stuff. Okay, so what is the one question that I haven't asked you that I should have done?
Yeah, now this one I find tricky.
Or I can rephrase that. What is the one question you want people to ask you?
The one question, oh, it always comes back to me to this tie between the two things that I love doing. And I don't know whether it's to do with how do I get my business noticed. I tend to start my copywriting projects from kind of website up. So if someone comes to me and they say, oh, can you write me 4 blog posts a month, for example, I'll generally say no. But if they're interested in starting with their website, and because on the basis, the logical basis that if you're driving traffic to your website needs to be A1 for to even start thinking about producing regular content. There's no point doing that if your website's not as good as it could possibly be. So I guess on the copywriting side, I would say if it's not cheating by answering one question with two answers.
It's your five questions. You answer them how you want to. There ain't no right or wrong here.
Excellent. I like to hear that. So yeah, how can I think in a lot of cases, how can I get my business noticed with clever copy, I guess. I my newsletter is called The Clever Copy Club, although it's actually less about copy now and more about freelancing, but that's beside the point. So yeah, I really think that when I find a new client, that the thing that blows them away is just how easy it is to work with me. I think they quite often say, oh, you know, I'll get a call from a marketing manager and they'll say, oh, we've been trying to write our own website in-house because, you know, nobody knows our business better than we do. I'm kind of like, well, yeah, and everybody can write, can't they? But not everybody can write a website, at least in the way that it should be written. So, yeah, I guess how can working with a copywriter help me? Mm-hmm. Or my business, and the answer is it's just so easy. It is so damn easy, and people are always sort of blown away by just how little time and involvement it takes them. Sometimes they have a problem getting used to, oh, this is going to cost how much, because I like to consider myself to be the Stella Artois of copywriters. I'm reassuringly expensive, but yeah, I've been doing it for a very long time. And
I met a guy who's got one contract and it's 50K a month. So you know, as a copywriter.
I hope he doesn't have IR35 issues.
Well, he might do. He's it's on crypto. That's where you can give you a guess.
Okay.
The industry. So yeah, there's obviously lots of money to be made in that area. So yeah,
50K a month. God, absolutely. But yeah, on the other side, of course, the side of helping freelancers and the self-employed community, that comes down to how can I get more enjoyment from self-employment? Because as far as I'm concerned, a lot of the training that I do is about the reality versus the expectation. Because we all love the freelance dream. We love the idea of being our own boss, first of all, and working where we want, when we want, how we want.
The greatest danger of freelance work, and I did it, I absolutely did this, is you create yourself a job without benefits.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I might borrow that, because that is precisely what it is. And you go from employment where you have one boss telling you what to do to freelance life where you've got off one treadmill and on to another, where instead of having one boss, you've actually got multiple bosses.
And you've got absolutely no benefits, no time off, no paid time off, no nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to do everything yourself. So, yeah. And, you know, and there's no IT department to sort out when the computer goes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's all those things.
Of course, your IT people, seriously, it's the first thing you should do. That is exactly it. Because, yeah, it can be so much better. It can be so much more fun. It's so much more fulfilling. You just have to know how to set the boundaries, how you have to know the kind of empowering magic of saying no. And how and when to do that, and really how to prioritize your mental health and well-being, because without doing that whole putting your oxygen mask on first, you've got nothing to give unless you're taking care of you.
Do you have a top tip that you want to give out to people who are in the freelance world or thinking about freelance?
Yeah, buy my book.
Get to buy your book.
it's really difficult to do that. I think every podcast I've been interviewed on, everybody says, what one tip would you share? And I'm kind of like, eight of them in the book, and the eight of them are like, those are the ones that I kind of decided. So every time I give a different answer, I would say, like, let's just be really super practical and say you have to have savings behind you. You have to have a pot of money that's going to tide you over through the quiet times, because there will be quiet times. And even if you get busy straight away, you know, you've got great contacts, you've nurtured your network, you've kept everybody warm, and then suddenly you kind of hit the ground running and you're busy straight away. It can take time to get paid. So it's really important to have savings. And if you have that money, that kind of emergency fund behind you, it's just so much easier to kind of take the fear out of the quiet times, because there are always quiet times in freelance life. Maybe not for me after 20 years, I guess that just kind of evaporated, but it should have evaporated a lot quicker. But generally speaking, those peaks and troughs that we all feel, they're based on that kind of like, where's the next job coming from? That's based on fear. And that's just not a nice place to be. If you can switch that fear into seeing those quiet times as an opportunity for your business, and you can have this list of things that you want to focus on, business development tasks that are perhaps going to make you more visible, you're nurturing your network, you're working on ongoing content for your business, you're learning new skills like upping your Canva game if you want to start producing great looking content, or you're reading books or listening to podcasts that are going to help you become a better business owner and a better you. Mm-hmm. All those things, you'll get so carried away in the excitement and the energy of working on those positive tasks that you'll almost forget that work is quiet. And then as soon as you're focused on something profitable and productive and positive, the work will start flooding back in. Don't know why, but it always does.
Brilliant tip. Thank you very much. So how, I mean, obviously there's the book, which is called
Survival Skills for Freelancers.
And they can find that on all the usual places, I guess.
Amazon, exclusively at the moment. I am working very hard as a self-published author to get stocked in bookshops. And it feels like a closed loop of a system. I don't know if anybody else has experienced it, but it will hopefully be available in bookshops. But at the moment, Amazon's the easiest place. Or DM me if anybody wants to buy it.
Very difficult to get into bookshops without a publisher.
Very difficult, yeah.
So, and how else can they find you?
Probably the best and easiest thing is to go to survivalskillsforfreelancers.com.
Yep.
That contains more information about the book. It contains a link to Amazon to buy a copy, or you can always email me. There's the email address, there's all my social media links, and there's also a link to my copywriting website. If you want to connect with me on social, do always drop me a personalized note to say you found me through Paul's podcast. And I'm more than happy to connect. And I guess LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram are the most popular.
Well, all those links will be available at lifepassionandbusiness.com, and they'll be on the podcast notes as well. So you can find those links, and you can always catch up with Sarah from that and that way. So that's wonderful. Is there any particular people you want to talk to, or particular people you like to work with?
Well, what I'm starting to do, having just finished 12 weeks of group mentoring for the Freelance Her 100 scheme, which is one of those incredible opportunities that came through the book and would not have happened otherwise. I love that experience of mentoring so much that now I want to kind of help people who have read the book and who need personal one-to-one help putting the advice and the activities that are in the book, putting them into practice in their own business. So they need a little bit of accountability, a little bit of one-to-one help and guidance. So yeah, anybody that wants to talk to me about a mentoring package, get in touch. And then on the copywriting side, any business that wants to start with a relationship with a copywriter that's kind of based from website first, get your messages really, really tight and strong to attract the right clients to make your business more successful, get in touch with me then as well.
Fantastic. Well, all that information will be at lifepassionandbusiness.com, and you know, let's see what happens. Who knows? So we get to our last question on this podcast, which is the big question that we have that everybody, well, the thing, I think very few people actually sit down and think about this, but the question is, what is the meaning of life for you?
So yeah, I agree with you. I don't think I've ever sat down and thought about this, but I think on the most basic level, it is having that desire to improve the world by helping others using your experience, your skills, and your knowledge. So if you can use the things that you've done to help other people achieve success, but with fewer of the mistakes that you've made. And I guess that's exactly what I'm trying to achieve throughout the book. And it's certainly, according to the feedback and the reviews that I've had, the emails I've had, it really is helping to do that. So that feels to me like my way that I'm making a difference, just one person at a time.
Wonderful. So Sarah Townsend, thank you so much for being with me today. It's been lovely to explore your life through my five questions. Thank you.
It's been great to chat to you. Thank you very much.
All the best. And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Sarah Townsend. You can find her book, Survival Skills for Freelancers, on Amazon, or you can go to the website survivalskillsforfreelancers.com. Sarah can also be found on Twitter, LinkedIn and Instagram. And if you'd like to check out her copywriting, do check out the website sarahtownsendeditorial.co.uk. Now, all of those links can be found at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. And while you're there, I have a new resource for you. I mentioned it on the show, how I use the three questions or part of the questions in my daily process. I've put this on a one sheet for you. It's called The Three Steps to Daily Success. Pick up your free copy and you could discover how to change your day with just three questions in 5 minutes. So that's it from me for this week. Thank you so much for being here with me on this journey. Now, as I say every week, please do the business. Like, subscribe and follow this podcast, because it's when you do that, you support this ecosystem and it helps other people find good podcasts like this one. So thank you so much for your time and attention, and I'll catch you next time. All the best.